Hello, I'm Darren Jordan. This is Counting the Cost on Al Jazeera, your weekly look at the world of business and economics. This week, 2021, a year of economic recovery, but also a year of supply chain bottlenecks, soaring inflation and Omicron. So, will it be a bumpy road in the next 12 months, or will it be a year of progress? Also this week, a downturn in the property sector, an energy supply crunch and subdued consumption. China's economy ground to a halt towards the end of 2021. Critics say it could hit a great wall. So, will it? Too big to be ignored by the financial establishment, cryptocurrencies have hit $3 trillion in value and are now becoming mainstream. Will the virtual money see a big year again in 2022? Now, mass vaccinations, progress in antiviral drugs and eased restrictions. 2021 has proved an opportunity for many countries to reverse economic losses caused by the pandemic. But opening up businesses and going back to normal life has brought numerous setbacks too, such as the rising cost of living. Despite the challenges, hopes were running high for the new year until the Omicron variant and access to vaccines changed the calculus once again. So what's to come in 2022? Well, let's have a look first at what defined 2021. From China, the world's factory, to the biggest port in California, ships queued at harbours overwhelmed with the rise in demand. Supply chains tightened, either because of the shortage of goods or people to deliver them. Natural gas, oil and other fuel markets were squeezed, driving an energy crisis, particularly in Europe. Heating homes and driving cars became very costly. With that came soaring inflation that's curbing the purchasing power of people on low wages. The US has seen its worst monthly inflation numbers in almost 40 years. Many governments have been scratching their heads over monetary policies to tackle the problems. Among the options are raising interest rates and winding down stimulus packages. Well, for China, it was not just a problem of supply chains and the energy crunch. Its property sector is at risk too, with real estate giant Evergrande on the verge of collapse. China's economic growth weakened in the third quarter of 2021. President Xi Jinping's critics say new rules to control the amount owed by big real estate developers, the crackdown on tech companies and celebrities have proven costly for the economy. Well, China and other countries are also busy trying to tame cryptocurrencies while pushing plans to issue their own digital coins. Meanwhile, Bitcoin and others were going big, even with a volatile market. The virtual currencies have hit $3 trillion and, most importantly, they've gone mainstream with many international investors embracing them. So there's lots to unpack with our panel of experts. From London, Bilal Hafiz, Microhive Chief Executive. From the town of Benalmadena, Pueblo in Spain, Jimena Blanco, Research Director and Head of Risk Insights Americas at Verisk Maplecroft. And from Hong Kong, Rashia Desai, Fund Manager at Asia Frontier Capital. Welcome all to the programme. Bilal, let me start with you, if I may. I mean, Omicron seems to be the buzzword at the moment. Do you think governments are reacting to every twist and turn of the pandemic? And are we going to see more adaptation policies as the pandemic changes?
Well, I do think governments are reacting very dynamically around the Omicron variant. And it's interesting that different countries are responding differently. So, for example, what we have seen is in continental Europe, governments have been fairly aggressive in introducing lockdown measures, requirements of vaccine passports to enter venues. The UK, on the other hand, initially was fairly relaxed. And as the cases have gone up, they've started to introduce more aggressive measures. Then on the other side, you have the US, which essentially is minimizing the risk of Omicron and not really introducing any additional measures beyond recommendations to have the vaccine. So we are seeing governments respond, but it varies depending which part of the world that we're in.
Yeah, Jimena, what about Latin America? How is the pandemic impacting economies there, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think with Latin America, there's very few tools left to be used, right? Because the region responded in such a draconian manner during 2020 and early 2021 that actually implementing many of the same measures that Western Europe is taking would be socially, economically, and politically very difficult. I mean, economically, the region was the hardest hit of any region in the world, and recovery prospects are slimming down. So if we think about, you know, some economies will return to pre-pandemic GDP levels in 2023, but that's the best case scenario. We have economies that are looking at a potential another lost decade. So that has huge social impacts. Governments aren't able to dictate quarantines and school closures like they did in 2020. And also we have crucial elections in 2022 with some of the biggest democracies in the region going to the polls. So thinking about how pandemic measures can impact incumbents or traditional political elites is clearly front and center of any government decision. The region does have one advantage at the moment, which is South America is in the Southern Hemisphere summer. So cases are lower and contagion rates are lower than they were in the north.
And Rashia, what's the forecast then for growth in Asia? I mean, will Omicron have more impact there as countries like South Korea, for instance, impose tighter pandemic restrictions?
Well, if you look at most of the developing markets in Asia or emerging markets in Asia, I think with respect to the pandemic or the Omicron variant or any future variants, I think most of the governments in the region have basically decided to live with the virus, given the fact that we have entered the third year of the pandemic. So you had pretty strict restrictions in 2020 and also for large parts of 2021. So there's been a large economic cost across markets in Asia, for example, in India and Vietnam and Thailand as well. And at the same time, if vaccination rates have increased significantly across pretty much most countries in this part of the world, for example, both Vietnam and Thailand have a vaccination rate for the total population of about 60%. So that really is helping them open up the economies and manage the situation much better. So as long as hospitalization levels are under control and things are not as bad as what they were in 2021 with the Delta variant, I think most economies will manage the situation. They won't really lock down on a large scale because the economic cost will be too high. So I think growth will see pretty strong recovery in 2022 for most markets in emerging markets in Asia.
So Bilal, the big issue in 2021 are supply chain backlogs and labor shortages. Has Omicron, do you think, knocked the supply chain back on its heels? And what's going to happen to consumer prices and wages for 2022?
Absolutely. Supply chain issues are probably front and center as one of the biggest issues. And I think Omicron will have an impact on the supply chain. That said, I don't think the effect will be as large as it was when we had the Delta wave. I think manufacturing companies and factories have adapted to big increases in the COVID variants and so on. But nevertheless, as we do have restrictions in multiple countries, there will be restrictions at ports and so on. That at the margin will have an impact on the supply chain as a whole. I'd also add that China itself tends to be a bit more aggressive in dealing with outbreaks of COVID. So if China was to lock down ports or cities associated with the important factories, then that will have an impact on the supply chain. So yes, it will have an impact on the supply chain, but not as much as it did before.
Yeah, Rashia, let's just stay with China, because China's economy bounced back from the pandemic in 2020, but it weakened in the third quarter of 2021. What do you think went wrong with China, and what risks does it face in the year ahead, do you think?
I think a couple of factors with China. So like you correctly mentioned, they handled the pandemic pretty well in 2020 and had a strong recovery in 2020 as well. In 2021, given the fact that China has pretty much a zero COVID policy in terms of, keeping COVID cases extremely low, whenever there are large number of cases or outbreaks, they obviously shut down, for example, factories or have social restrictions in place, which really impacted growth this year as well. So if you look at retail sales, they were quite weak pretty much across the board this year because of these restrictions which have been in place. And also, of course, if you look at some of the other developments in China in respect to the tech crackdown, which has happened over the past almost 1 year now, which has affected overall growth and sentiment in China. And also other sectors, like, for example, real estate and construction, the government has come down pretty hard on that sector as well with respect to Evergrande, which has also affected the overall GDP growth because the real estate sector is a large part of the economy in China. So these are some of the headwinds they face this year. But I think if you look at, in general, the size of China's economy, it's the second largest economy globally now. And of course, as it transitions away from high growth infrastructure-led model into a more services/consumption-led model, there will be some roadblocks along the way. But that does not mean that China is going to see a significant slowdown where, the whole entire global economy will come under pressure. Because I think if you look at expectations for growth about 5% for the next couple of years, I think that's very reasonable for the size of China's economy.
Himina, let me ask you a question about China. I mean, could China's economic worries be beneficial, do you think, to smaller economies? Because COVID-19 indeed has highlighted the risk of concentrating supply chains in China, hasn't it?
Of course. And I mean, Latin America has a huge role to play for potential nearshoring for US manufacturers, right? And that was the buzzword since the beginning of the pandemic, right? Could companies relocate to the region? But that doesn't come, you know, without its own challenges around logistical infrastructure, around human rights issues, which are also prevalent in Latin America, and around the cost of doing business in the region and the bureaucracy and overcoming some of those country risks of investing in Latin America. So, of course, there's, you know, a strong emphasis from certain governments, particularly those with very close commercial links to the United States and with existing manufacturing infrastructure, to increase on that. But this will be a very uneven development in terms of which countries can benefit or not from nearshoring as a result of the supply chain disruptions.
Yeah, and Bilal, so let's talk about the US then, because President Biden's facing the highest inflation levels in around 40 years or so. Will the Fed be able to bring rates down, and how can they quickly do that?
Well, indeed, President Biden has faced a big inflation challenge. And unlike previous instances, I do think the administration, the Biden administration, has been partly responsible for the high inflation rates that we are seeing in the US. And I think the central bank only has a limited role or less of an impact as one would think on the level of inflation. Because as we talked about earlier, supply chain issues are one of the biggest issues in causing inflation. And what caused the supply chain issues partly was to do with the fiscal stimulus that the President Biden and his administration implemented over the course of 2021, which led to a huge increase in demand for consumer goods at a time when there were supply issues. So in some ways, these policies were big contributory factors towards inflation rather than interest rates by the Fed. So I think more supply chain issues will be the key to forecasting inflation over the course of 2022 rather than what the central bank does.
Okay, and so Hibana, how could interest rates then affect emerging markets, and how will they deal with debt, especially when we could see a sharp rise in the cost of capital?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're already seeing it with, expectations of U.S. rate hikes impacting currencies across Latin America with significant falls on currencies. And the reality is that central banks in the region have also a very limited toolbox because of the size of the, of the off-the-books economy in the region. So even when they adopt monetary tools to try to contain inflation or to protect their own currencies, those only have limited impact. And I think, the supply chain disruptions that we're talking about here and Bilal mentioned also impacted Latin America, feeding into inflation, not only because of the expansionary measures that most central banks took during the initial response to the pandemic, but also because it was very hard to maintain logistical routes into the region.
Rishi, let me bring you in quickly here. Just a thought on China again, because China says it will focus on stabilizing its economy for 2022. Can it achieve that, or will it struggle to achieve any sort of meaningful economic growth for 2022?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you look at all the economic indicators, they've been, showing a slowdown over the last couple of quarters. And even the, some of the comments being made by policymakers have been that there will be both fiscal and monetary policy support to, shore up growth in 2022. And also, if you remember that, China went into the pandemic on a pretty strong economic footing. They handled the pandemic very well. So they didn't really have to come up with any major fiscal or monetary support in 2020 compared to some of the larger economies like the US or the UK. So they have enough room to provide support both monetarily and also in the fiscal space to support growth 2022.
Bilal, let's bring you back in here because you're in London, so let's talk about the situation in Europe. Inflation, is it not? It's challenging European central banks. Could we see governments then perhaps winding down their stimulus packages?
I think we will. If we take the euro area and the ECB, there's essentially the ECB did have its own QE program, like we've seen around the world. It's called PEP, and that's likely to be wound down by February or March of 2022. But they're likely to extend that QE program by expanding another QE program they have called the Asset Purchase Program, APP. And at the same time, it's very unlikely that the ECB will raise interest rates, unlike the Fed. And the reason for that is the ECB has been scarred in the past by raising interest rates when Inflation has spiked off the back of supply chain issues. So I think Europe does have an inflation problem. It's partly to do with the global supply chain issues. It's partly to do with higher oil prices. But I don't think the ECB will respond as aggressively as other central banks.
Jimena, many Latin American central banks followed Brazil and increased their interest rates. What are the risks involved briefly to the region by raising rates? And I mean, how can governments protect their currencies?
Well, I mean, the key risk is actually that governments are reacting very quickly, but they may be unable to use rates just to contain inflation. And we're looking at record levels of inflation in over a decade in most of the large economies. And I would say in terms of, you know, protecting the currency, again, very limited toolbox in major economies. I would watch Brazil in 2022 simply because the country is heading into a general election with high inflation rates, potential for discontent, and of course, the real having had a turbulent 2021. So I think that's the market to watch in terms of currency.
So let's just move the discussion on to big tech. Bilal, let's bring you back in here because China has pretty much tamed its tech giants like Alibaba and Didi. But Western tech companies like Facebook and Google, for instance, are still fighting with the regulators, aren't they? Will 2022, do you think, see Western tech giants come under more regulatory pressure, do you think?
I do think there will be much more regulatory pressure from especially the US and also the Europeans against tech companies. To some extent, what the Chinese have done against large tech companies is what many people, many critics of tech companies want the US to do. So the Chinese have tamed many Chinese tech companies in terms of how they hold data and so on. The difference, though, in the case of the US is that tech giants are very powerful. They have very large market cap. They're very influential politically. And in some extent, they're viewed as examples of the US success story. So while I think the US will try to tame them, it'll be very hard for them to actually implement regulations that will curtail their ability to expand their businesses. The Europeans, on the other hand, I think will continue to implement policies that will try to constrain tech companies.
Rashir, let's talk to you now about renewable energy, because the rest of the world is starting to make this shift to renewables. And that's much harder, is it not, for developing nations who don't have the money, they haven't got the technology. What kind of progress do you think we'll see in climate policies to help poorer countries, do you think?
I think if you look at, you know, developing markets in Asia or this part of the world, I mean, they are moving towards some more green energy projects, for example, focusing on investing in, you know, wind power and, you know, solar power. They're still early days because, like you mentioned, the cost involved to transition from fossil fuels onto green energy is quite high for many of these countries. So yes, there's an initiative, but it'll still take time. And at the same time, if you keep in mind that many of these economies are growing by 6% or 7% every year annually post-pandemic, so they will require a lot of power. And at the same time, you know, for them, putting up, you know, a coal power plant or thermal power plant is obviously much cheaper and makes much more economic sense at the same time as investing in green energy. So yes, it'll take some time, but they're making the early moves. And also, for example, electric vehicles. I mean, that's a big theme in the West and also in China, but also in other parts of Asia, for example, India or other parts of Southeast Asia, it's still early days because of the cost involved to transition to EVs or green energy.
Jimena, the other big story, of course, is cryptocurrencies. They've had a big year. We saw El Salvador become the first country to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. Let me ask you, are cryptocurrencies an opportunity or a danger for Latin America, do you think?
I think it provides an opportunity for countries, governments that want to use them with a politically motivated goal. And I think that's, you know, we're seeing that clearly with El Salvador. We have seen other moves in the region with intentions to adopt cryptocurrencies to avoid transactions in US dollars. And of course, you know, I think this is very much linked to the political changes that we're seeing in the region and the return of governments that are potentially trying to use, you know, the US-China competition to move away from US influence. And so I think that will be key in determining how cryptocurrencies behave in Latin America in the future. It will be ideologically motivated.
Yeah, and Bilal, regulators have been trying to rein in crypto while looking to launch their own centralized digital currencies. Tech companies like Amazon, Facebook are talking about launching their own virtual currencies. How do you think, briefly, this three-way fight will play out in 2022?
I think if we step back for a moment, crypto markets have become much larger and much more established. So I think to some extent, the genie's out of the bottle now, and we'll see a growth in all of these markets quite aggressively. I do think that the crypto markets themselves, outside of large private companies, will probably end up doing the best to some extent. They'll see the fastest growth. I think there'll be big regulatory challenges against large tech companies like Facebook launching their own currencies. And as for central banks, I think just the nature of central banks, who tend to be quite cautious, they'll review launching their own digital currencies, but I think they'll take a lot longer to actually implement them. And instead, it will be smaller countries, whether it's in Latin America or others, that will probably be the pioneers of launching central bank digital currencies.
Rushia, in terms of the growth in the digital economy, what are the opportunities then for Asian countries? And will they benefit from a shift in supply chains, do you think?
Well, in terms of the digital economy or the shift to the digital economy nation countries outside of China, I think the opportunity is huge because the base is so small. I mean, the internet penetration levels and the smartphone penetration levels are only increasing in many markets like India, Vietnam, Philippines, Indonesia. So it's a very low base that they're growing from. So I think the opportunity is huge for many of these markets. And also many of these markets or economies are very cash-based. And the pandemic has obviously changed consumer behavior the last probably 18 or 24 months. And so you'll see more consumers shifting to online purchases or doing many of the transactions online. So I think it's a massive opportunity for many Asian countries outside of China to grow this sector. And also from the supply chain diversification perspective, I think that's a big theme also in this part of the world, because that began much before the pandemic, and it's only going to accelerate going forward as well.
Let me get a final quick thought from all of you before we wrap things up. Bilal, let me ask you, does the road to global economic recovery start with equal access to vaccines? And are we looking at economic bloom or doom for 2022?
Well, I do agree. I do think vaccines hold a key to managing or ending the pandemic, and equal access will be critical because, as we've seen over 2021, variants emerge in all sorts of countries that, if they don't have the vaccine themselves, will end up spreading to richer countries. So I do think, vaccine equality will be key to dealing with the pandemic. In terms of doom and gloom for the economy, I do think 2022 will be a very challenging year for growth. We're going to be seeing the Fed raising interest rates. I think China has lots of challenges on its growth model. So I think it will be more on the downside risk side.
Himna, very quickly, equal access to vaccines, is that the key, as Bilal is saying? And are we looking at bloom or doom for 2022?
I think absolutely equal access to vaccines is crucial, and not just in terms of countries, but regionally within those countries. Latin America having major challenges geographically getting to most at-risk populations. In terms of the economy for the region, I think it's more of a gloomy picture, with the expectations we had in 2021 actually not being met and the region struggling to return to growth.
So, Rushia, I'll leave you with a final thought then. Is it bloom or doom for 2022? And is access to vaccines the key here for economic recovery?
Well, with respect to vaccine, I think in this part of the world, especially in emerging markets in Asia, vaccine access increased significantly over the past 9 or 12 months. So you will see vaccination rates increase quite significantly pretty much across the board in this year, which will actually help economic growth in Asia in 2022. So yes, there are concerns about inflation, about the Fed raising rates. These are concerns which have been known for quite some time now. So I don't see any significant issue in terms of growth because everyone's coming off a pretty low base. So 2022 will be a pretty strong growth for Asia overall economically.
Well, we have to leave it there. That's all we have time for. Thank you to all our guests, Bilal Hafiz, Himina Blanco and Rushia Desai. Thank you very much indeed for your time. And that's it for our show this week. But remember, you can get in touch with us via Twitter. Use the hashtag AJCTC when you do, or drop us an email. countingthecost@aljazeera.net is our address. But there's more for you online at aljazeera.com/CTC. That'll take you straight to our page, which has individual reports, links and entire episodes for you to catch up on. And that's it for this edition of Counting the Cost. I'm Darren Jordan. From the whole team here, thanks for joining us. The news and Al Jazeera is next.